souvenirs of IRIB English Radio. Anyway, Mickey Delmage, thank you for sending us this email, and wish you all the best for the new year 2021. Keep in touch with IRIB English Radio. Mickey Delmage from Canada. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from our dear friends and listeners from around the world. Welcome back from Netherlands. We have an email from Joel Woodstra. This friend says, in the past, I would celebrate Christmas and New Year with my brother and sister, my parents and my grandparents at home with some other friends. And we would eat delicious food all together. Before the coronavirus pandemic, at 12 o'clock, we would go outside to see the beautiful fireworks. I wish all the listeners a very happy new year and wish you all the best. Salam Joel Woodstra from the Netherlands, and I hope I'm right in pronouncing your name because I don't know your language. Anyway, many thanks for sending us this email and many thanks for sharing your Christmas experience with us and with IRIB English Radio and with our dear listeners from around the world. This was a nice experience, but as you said, this experience was just before the coronavirus pandemic. Anyway, we congratulate you on the occasion of Christmas and New Year 2021, which is going to start. And we wish you joy, love, happiness, and peace on this occasion, the New Year. Jolt, yes, you were right with the outbreak of coronavirus. Many things has been restricted, including the celebrations, festivities, schooling, and even working. Everything has changed, and we have to cope with it. We have to deal with it, and we have to observe the rules and regulations until this disease is controlled around the world. We wish you a very happy New Year and Christmas, Joel Woodstra from the Netherlands. And again, thank you. Keep in touch with IRIB English Radio. And from Sweden, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, Krister Brandstorm. Our friend Krister says Christmas is, of course, one of the major holidays of the year when we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. We usually go to church on Christmas Eve, and there's also a morning mass on December 25th. For the New Year, we usually stay up until midnight when we celebrate the New Year while enjoying the fireworks display outside the windows in our flat in the center of our city. Oh well, greetings to you, Krister Brandstorm from Sweden, one of our regular listeners. I do express my appreciation for this email to us, and also for sharing your experience on Christmas to us and IRIB English Radio listeners. Firstly, Merry Christmas and many thanks for sharing this experience on this occasion. It was so sweet. I mean, watching the fireworks display outside the windows. However, these festivities and celebrations are restricted due to the coronavirus pandemic. Anyway, Krister Brandstorm, we wish you all the best in 2021 and Christmas. Stay with us and write to us very soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. Krister Brandstorm from Sweden. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters. Oh, well, here we have another email from Sweden, and this email is from Olmar Kovic, one of our regular listeners, who says, Although New Year 2021 is yet to come, here are good wishes for the new year to all those IRIB English radio listeners who celebrate Christmas with a special thanks for your kind email. Our Christmas celebration this time was harmonious and happy. Just my wife, Samka, our daughter, Arlinda, and myself. We have got a small Christmas tree, also a goat made of straw and some colored candles. Our Christmas food is not traditional for Sweden. It is rather varied with much vegetables. My memories from my childhood Christmases are still strong. After 75 years, we were four in the family: dad, mom, my younger brother, and myself, plus two cats. Our family was poor, but we always got presents for Christmas. One of my best Christmas gifts was binoculars when I was 7 years old. The Second World War had begun, and with binoculars, I would climb a tree to watch the military airplanes passing over our quarters. Swedish, most of them, but occasionally German planes, which came our way by special permission. I had a list with pictures and could identify most of the airplanes. Sweden was neutral, at least officially, during the war, so the military air traffic did not scare us. Our food at Christmas was traditional: stockfish, rice pudding, etc. We always had a big Christmas tree. My father fetched it from the wood. We decorated it with the many different things and with a star on top. We had candles, not electric, and this required caution to avoid a fire. We were poor, but still a happy family. I used the family's radio for listening to the roll from the age of 10. It was my keen interest, and it has stayed with me all these 75 years. The memories of the past are happy and sad at the same time. I am the only member of my childhood family still alive. My brother passed away 2 years ago, but I'm happy with my new family with four children, five grandchildren, and a small newborn great-grandchild. Thank you, Omar Kovic from Sweden. Thank you. It was such quite long email, but very sweet and happy email. First of all, I have to congratulate you on the occasion of Christmas and New Year 2021, which is yet to come. Olmar Kovic from Sweden. It was such a nice experience, your childhood, and you just shared it with us, and you said that at those times you had the bad memory of the World War, sorry. And but nowadays, I think these events have changed, and I think these days we have the coronavirus pandemic, and we have to cope with it. We have to stay home and observe the hygienic protocols. And anyway, this is the world and its developments. Anyway, we have to cope with these developments, and we in IRB English Radio send you our congratulation message on the occasion of Christmas and also the new year, which is yet to come. Many thanks for writing this email to us and sharing your experiences on your last Christmases. As you said, your childhood Christmases, which are still strong after 75 years. Wish you all the best. Omar Kovic from Sweden. And other listeners, I think time tells. We've skipped to another part of our program, that is this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Please, let's take a listen.
Yes, I'm 61 years of age. I'm a shortwave listener. I've been a shortwave listener for many, many years, listening to international broadcasts from all over the world. Well, I'm very glad that you are remaining on shortwave. Some international broadcasters have ceased broadcasting on shortwave in favor of the internet or satellite, but I'm glad that your station is remaining on shortwave and does put out a good signal here in Western Europe. So I'm very pleased to say that you're going against the trend of leaving shortwave than you are remaining on shortwave. And I believe that is very, very important, because there are many people who still do listen around the world on shortwave.
Yes, I'm a member of the British DX Club, which is a club for those who listen to international broadcasts on shortwave and on medium wave. I'm also a radio amateur and I'm a member of the Radio Society of Great Britain. Well, what I would say is keep listening to shortwave, keep listening to international broadcasts, listen to what they have to say, and listen to their opinions on world events. Certainly listen to broadcasts from Iran.
And here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special This Sunday program. Keep in touch and have a good time.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Around the World with Reporters.
The floating Safa Reservoir north of the port of Hodeidah, which carries 1 million barrels of crude oil, poses a great environmental risk since it has not been put under any maintenance since the beginning of the war on Yemen. Recently, an agreement was reached between Sana'a and the United Nations to maintain the reservoir. Sana'a has already signed the agreement, while the UN is still stalling until today.
The Ministry of Foreign Affairs facilitated the entry of technical experts for the maintenance of the safer tank, as it was agreed upon in July. But we were surprised by the United Nations postponement of the operation to February next year, and we do not know about the reasons. We hope the United Nations will expedite the dispatch of maintenance teams for the safer tank, because if a leak occurred, it would constitute a major disaster.
The Supreme Economic Committee confirms that the United Nations has not yet signed the agreement and surprised everyone by delaying the arrival of experts until February 15th, which could cause a disaster because the water had already entered the engine of the tanker, threatening it to sink or explode.
The United Nations is using the safer oil vessel as a pretext to impose political and economic pressure on the government of Sana'a. The Saudi-led coalition, on the other hand, has also used the tanker to implement its own agenda, despite greater dangers that also threatening the Suez Canal.
The delay of the maintenance operation, as well as the continued detention of oil ships by the Saudi coalition, has led to an oil derivative crisis from which Yemenis have been suffering for months. This has also reflected negatively on the health sector.
Experts confirm that the sinking of the reservoir will cause an environmental catastrophe from which Yemen will not recover for more than 30 years until it gets rid of the dire consequences of contamination. The crisis will also cause the extinction of millions of marine life from the Red Sea. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a, Yemen.
Christmas Eve 2020, Prime Minister Boris Johnson signed off on an historic post-Brexit trade and security agreement with the European Union after an intense 24-hour negotiation period. A press conference expected early in the day finally came in the afternoon after lawyers and translators had crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's.
I'm very pleased to tell you this afternoon that we have completed the biggest trade deal yet, worth £660 billion. A year, a comprehensive Canada-style free trade deal between the UK and the EU, a deal that will protect jobs across this country, a deal that will allow goods, UK goods and components to be sold without tariffs and without quotas in the EU market, a deal which will, if anything, allow our companies and our exporters to do even more business with our European friends.
A deal will mean Britain finally leaving the bloc's single market and customs union in a week, and freedom of movement will end. It also settles the future arrangements on a vast range of issues, from aviation and transport to civil nuclear cooperation and energy. The sticking points that took Brexit to the brink of no deal was access to British fishing waters, a contentious issue that prompted the UK to send Navy ships to the English Channel in case of clashes, and the level playing field, which is an important part of the EU single market, allowing for fair and open competition. The negotiations were very difficult, with lots at stake for many, and it was an agreement worth fighting for. It will allow us to avoid major disruptions to workers, businesses and travellers after January 1st. It will protect European interests, and this agreement is also, I believe, in the interests of the United Kingdom. It will lay solid foundations for a new start with long-time friends, and finally, it will ensure we can leave Brexit behind us. Europe continues to move forward. Despite the collective sigh of relief and resignation across Britain, the devil is in the detail. French media made waves in the hours leading up to it by asserting the UK had made huge concessions, something Westminster was quick to deny. Hardline Tory Brexiteers from the European Research Group have said its star chamber of lawyers will be convened to analyse the proposed agreement, suggesting it's not over yet. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Since its independence in November 1948, Lebanon, the small Arab country, has been the scene of a myriad of conflicts, challenges, and political bickering. The year 2020 was not unlike any other year, but even more challenging. As the country was engulfed in the economic, financial, and monetary crisis, another challenge hit the global scene in the form of a novel coronavirus. The first few positive cases of COVID-19 in Lebanon forced the country, like the rest of the world, into a lockdown. This lockdown was preceded by an unseen monetary crisis where the Lebanese lira plummeted against the U.S. dollar. U.S. sanctions on Lebanon led banks to limit cash withdrawals, and queues were seen daily facing banks. Observers look at the year 2020 as being one of the darkest periods in Lebanon's history.
We've lost everything, literally. You know, we've lost the companies, we've lost the banks, we've lost the economical system, we've lost the political system. There's nothing left. And you know, when you have nothing left, the only thing left is humans and their potentials.
The overall system of governance in Lebanon is seen as something that needs to end. Waking up to a new crisis had become a norm until the Beirut port blast. a large amount of ammonium nitrate exploded. The explosion ripped through the port of Beirut, killing over 200 people and wounding over 6,500, destroying large parts of the city.
With a multifaceted crisis in the Mediterranean country, the explosion in the Beirut port in August of 2020 only served as an additional unprecedented blow and a national tragedy for all Lebanese. However, politicians and the media remained intensely at odds.
We're used to, you know, Israeli attacks. We're used to having a little bit of, you know, security incidents on the ground. But we have never been used to something so huge. As huge as it is, I guess it was great for uniting the Lebanese over, you know, a cause. This time and during the blast, we didn't find part of the Lebanese being happy for, you know, blasting another part of Lebanon. It was like, you know, general for all sects, for all people. And I guess it was a turning point because Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said that at this point we really need to rethink the political system in Lebanon. It was the first time he ever said that publicly on air.
Following the blast, Prime Minister Hassan Diab was forced to step down in respect for the victims. Investigations into the blast are still pending. Same goes for talks on forming a new government. Although the majority of Lebanese factions agreed to name Saad Hariri as prime minister, it seems the year 2020 will end and the formation of a new government remains in limbo. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Palestinian Refugees Committee in the Gaza Strip organized a rally against the UN AIDS and Health Services reduction. Palestinian refugees who have impacted badly by this reduction participated in the demonstration, calling for the world body's attention to the dire condition in the impoverished enclave.
It's our right to get the UN's aid services. People here are living in a deteriorating condition amid the pandemic. People here can't afford living, and now, with the reduction of the UN aid services, their life is getting even worse.
Palestinians believe the reduction in aid services by the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, is an attempt by the U.S. to liquidate the humanitarian organization. Earlier, the U.S. announced plans to withhold $65 million of aid to the UNRWA until further notice.
The UN aid services reduction will have dire consequences as it deprives the Palestinian refugees from their basic rights. The reduction comes amid a critical political time as Israel is stepping up its pressure on the Palestinians.
By reducing the refugees' aid, the UN is standing beside the Israeli occupation at the expense of Palestinians' rights. We are calling for our rights, and the UN should fulfill its commitments.
The demonstrators call on the international community to reverse the reduction decision by the UN and keep on supporting the Palestinian refugees who have lost their lands and were expelled since 1948.
The reduction policy aims at reducing the aid services step by step until Palestinians are completely deprived of their rights. The UNRWA was established to help and support Palestinian refugees. The reduction policies serve Israel's interests.
UNRWA was established to aid the 700,000 Palestinians who were expelled from their homes during the war surrounding Israeli occupation's establishment in 1948.
More than the half of the 2 million people in the Gaza Strip are dependent on support from UNRWA, and depriving them from the services they need will worsen the living conditions. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Some 12 million children are facing a nightmare in Yemen, where one child dies every 10 minutes from preventable disease and the lack of healthcare services due to the ongoing war and the blockade imposed by the Saudi coalition.
We are about to enter the 7th year since the start of the aggression against our country, which has greatly affected the humanitarian situation, especially for children, who are the most affected segment in all aspects of life, such as health, education, social and other aspects, and they have lost all the rights guaranteed by international human rights law.
The numbers of affected children continue to grow each day. 2.1 million children are acutely malnourished and 358,000 severely malnourished, meaning that some children are already suffering under famine-like conditions. Meanwhile, Yemen's Ministry of Health held a press conference to shed more light on the dire conditions of children in the country.
What the children of Yemen suffer as a result of the Saudi aggression and blockade since March 2015 is a real humanitarian catastrophe by all international standards. More than 2,400,000 children are deprived of education, and more than 3 million children are homeless. Malnutrition, which is spreading among children, has been condemned by international organizations and is said to be the result of not getting enough food.
Saudi Arabia has committed countless atrocities against children in Yemen, where children are also targeted by airstrikes. The air attacks have killed thousands of children and left thousands more suffering from disabilities, not to mention travel restrictions on thousands of patients, including children who need to travel for treatment.
As the world is silently watching an entire people being deprived of the basics of life, Yemen has become the most dangerous place in the world for children to grow up, according to UNICEF. Abdul Latif Al-Washari, Sana'a.
The Knesset, the Israeli parliament, dissolved itself and the unity cabinet collapsed, pushing the Israelis into yet another early election on 23rd of March that would be the fourth in 2 years. The Knesset dispersed after failing to meet the legal deadline for approving a budget for 2020. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of the conservative Likud party had refused to present a budget in violation of his coalition agreement with his main rival turned partner Benny Gantz of the centrist Blue and White party.
The dissolving of the Knesset was simply because of Netanyahu's unwillingness to give up the premiership. The very possible scenario is the return of another political impasse for Israel. So Netanyahu will not be able to form a coalition that's satisfying and acceptable for all parties. We may even witness a fifth election after the upcoming vote.
Experts, however, say the dissolving of the Knesset would have been more advantageous for Netanyahu. It's not only a deep distrust between Netanyahu and Gantz. Netanyahu was gambling on another election in the hope of forming a right-wing religious cabinet that would grant him some kind of immunity from prosecution. Netanyahu's corruption trial is scheduled to move into an intensive evidentiary stage in early 2021, requiring his regular presence in court. The current cabinet will remain in place in a caretaker capacity until after the election, and the formation of a new cabinet is a process that could take many months. However, the Israelis are convinced that there isn't any guarantee that the fourth election would finally end Israel's internal dogged stalemate. According to observers, Netanyahu has triggered early elections in an attempt to stay in power beyond his current term. However, they add that Netanyahu's fight for re-election is a difficult battle, mainly as his corruption trial is scheduled to resume with witness testimony next February. Mona Kandib, Occupy, Ramallah.
Every year ahead of Christmas, this street in downtown Tehran gets packed with Christian residents in the capital, a rush to buy last-minute items to celebrate the birth of Jesus. This year, however, the hustle and bustle is gone, as the coronavirus pandemic has emptied the streets and pushed people into their homes. Many families cannot celebrate the festive season together. But Christians here say this does not mean they should abandon the celebrations when they can do it online.
Happy New Year and Merry Christmas to all. This year we miss all the family gatherings, but it's all right. We can catch up with each other using video calls. I hope that in the new year, the pandemic will be gone.
Merry Christmas to all Iran and all the world. And in spite of that, we have this pandemic time. I wish everybody will have very soon good times, and 2021 will be happy for every of us.
Nearly 120,000 Christians live in Iran. The majority of them are Armenians, who follow the Oriental Orthodox branch of Christianity. While they make up less than 1% of the Iranian population, they feel at home when it comes to Christmas.
Merry Christmas. It's good to see the Christmas atmosphere running deep here in Iran, where the majority are Muslims. We feel at home here.
Iran has for the past month been under nationwide lockdown to contain the resurging virus. This has curtailed religious ceremonies across the red zones in the country. And church rituals are no exception.
While 2020 was not a happy year, Christians here say it taught humanity a great lesson, to value even the shortest moments with their loved ones. Knowing this year's Christmas, Happy New Year is more than just a wish. And everyone is praying that in 2021, the coronavirus will be a thing of the past. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Karina was a working mom with a job in the tourism sector, decimated by the pandemic. With no savings to fall back on, and with her husband's delivery job earnings nowhere near enough for them to get by, they ended up in a position no one wants to find themselves.
I never knew about food bank. I just found out since I was on a financial difficulty.
Karina's quest for help led her to Educare Family Support Service, one of many publicly funded companies helping families down on their luck in the age of COVID.
We have lots of different food items that will go in. The plan behind it was that we would be able to prepare hampers for families, who disadvantaged families who may not be able to afford to have a Christmas meal or Boxing Day meal. So we've ensured that we've provided a hamper with everything excluding the meat. At the moment, we're on about 270. Literally, that is 270 families.
270 of many more families facing food insecurity and hunger, exacerbated by the pandemic, a situation that's drawn in UNICEF for the first time in its 70-year history in this country.
In these unprecedented times, I would imagine that these families have become known to their professionals that they're engaging with and are now require additional support.
This cavernous space is the interior of an Anglican church in West London. In normal times, it would see worshippers kneeling in prayer. Today, it's dedicated to something more pressing, getting food into people's cupboards.
I got quite emotional, actually, about, you know, just the thought that you're privileged and get to enjoy Christmas and then other people are going without, especially at the moment with these troubled times. So I thought, if I can come and make just a little bit of difference.
These hampers are being stuffed with supplies to last families for a few days. People used to go to food banks to pick them up. Since the onset of COVID, the whole project of compassion has taken on a new dimension, deliveries.
These volunteer drivers will be dropping off food and presents at hundreds of households for the next 3 days. A drop in the bucket considering the number of families depending on these supplies. And some of those families have up to 6 children.
Most of these volunteers found out about this project on social media. Some of them have dedicated their only day off to being here.
To see the family smiles and the people who need the things is, you know, I can't explain what you feel. The smile of their faces just can give me the energy. They can make my day.
Some have brought their young ones along so they can see firsthand what their less fortunate peers are going through. Those with bigger vehicles have come as couples to help transport more of this humanitarian assistance to homes where kitchen cabinets are not restocked as often as they should.
It's nothing for me to offer a couple of hours. So we are also in a position where it could be me who needs this support.
This year has been very contrasting in the fact that some people just getting richer and richer and richer, and we're reaching rock bottom, really, in sense of community is getting destroyed, really.
If you're feeding a family of 4 to 6 people, that's going to last Yeah, 2 days. It will get them through till Christmas Eve, hopefully.
And we all think we're struggling. Karina has had to adapt to her new world, caring for her 3-year-old daughter in a small rented apartment with no garden while her husband works, and looking after her ailing father who lives on his own.
I know a lot of people are suffering during this difficult time. It's very challenging, but you have to be positive at all times. Seek for help. If you don't ask, you don't get it.
Karina is perhaps one of the tens of thousands of families, if not more, for whom survival depends on charitable donations. Saeed Puriza, London.
General Qasem Soleimani was a high-ranking Iranian military official whose popularity began to rise after he led the war on Daesh terrorists on the battlefields in Syria and Iraq. General Qasem Soleimani was the commander of Iran's Quds Force, the foreign arm of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. He was of great help to Syria as an advisor and organizer of Syrian troops when Daesh and other Takfiri terrorists launched a bloody assault on Syria in 2011. He also played a key role in creating Iraq's Popular Mobilization Unit, also known as Hashd al-Shaabi, in 2014, when Daesh declared its caliphate in Iraq and overran several provinces there. Hashd al-Shaabi later managed to defeat Daesh and drive the terrorist group out of Iraq. These victories for Syrian and Iraqi forces further increased General Soleimani's popularity among the Iraqis, Syrians, and Iranians. When General Soleimani declared the end of the Daesh Caliphate in 2018, the United States, which called itself the savior of the Iraqi and Syrian people, described him as its arch enemy and an obstacle to peace in the Middle East. The U.S. imposed sanctions on Soleimani. The Israeli regime also put Soleimani on its so-called terror list. In the year 2020, the assassination of General Soleimani and Hashd al-Shaabi's commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in a U.S. drone strike raises a key question. Was the United States really fighting Daesh? Or as U.S. President Donald Trump himself has said, was Daesh created by his predecessor Barack Obama? Perhaps now it would be easier to answer this question after the assassination of General Soleimani. What is clear is that the United States has killed a man who played the biggest role in both eliminating Daesh from the region and isolating Washington. Following this terrorist attack and the martyrdom of a group of people who had fought Daesh and other Takfiri terrorists round the clock, the question is, who really wants peace and stability in the region? And who is after igniting a war to plunder the Middle East?
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio.
You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. And in this program, we're going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise the children Islamically. The main source is the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Ayatollah Ray Shahri. And we have in our studio guest speaker, Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear sister.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you so much for inviting me over.
Thank you so much for being here. So in our previous discussion, we began with this question, stating that what are the common mistakes that parents usually do when upbringing their children? And you mentioned some, one of them being that we make them too dependent on us sometimes.
That's right. See, these are so innocent things, yeah? But yeah. We forego them. We don't know that they're really... hamper the child in the long run.
Exactly.
Another thing that mistakenly happens is that not being careful with the spouse in front of the children.
Mm.
When you quarrel, for example, it's natural for couples to have occasional arguments, of course, and sometimes even it tends up to be heated and bitter arguments. But it's very damaging to carry out in front of the children.
Yeah.
It's very important because children do not understand this. This relationship too much. So it's they don't even understand. It's not a cause of worry. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
They're natural arguments. But children don't understand that this is something very...
Maybe not so big,
yeah,
you know. That.
But they feel that it's a very big thing.
Exactly.
So it depresses them. And they begin to imagine the worst things.
That they'll get divorced.
Yeah, exactly. So it could be a sign that the parents don't love each other, don't love the children. And maybe sometimes even they feel that it's their fault that all this is happening.
Exactly.
You know, the arguments that the parents are doing so much for them, and now the child feels the lack of security. So this causes a depression and a lack of security among the children. And it could have damaging effects to the child as he grows up. And he would also begin thinking that this is a normal way of how couples should treat each other.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it would have a major, major effect on his own relationships also.
Exactly.
And he wouldn't treat, for example, or she wouldn't treat her husband, the wife, in the manner that Islam wants us to. So it's very important to be very careful of your husband or the parents between each other when you are confronting, when you are near the child.
Yeah.
You should have the seclusion that not near the child all these things should come up. Some parents also tell children to take sides.
Mm.
It's so bad. It gives such
a bad
effect that sometimes the wife feels that her husband is not treating her fairly. Yeah. So she may talk to the children and tell them the bad things.
Yeah.
Like it's a very
make them go against the father.
Yeah.
Instance.
And that will even affect the relationship between the children and the father in the long term.
Mm.
And they wouldn't be somebody to look upon as a father.
Exactly.
They would feel that the father always mistreated their mother. And that's a very bad thing, you know. There would be no respect and love for the father then. And this happens when they're children. It's terrible when it happens when they're children, especially. Because it'll leave a mark in their hearts that the father is unfair on them. Or vice versa also.
Yeah.
Also, it happens when you deprive the children of love and respect for the extended families. It's a great wrong to tell them things about their aunts and uncles.
Yeah.
And, to fill them up that so-and-so did so-and-so in this stage. And this is, and then they will not feel like doing Sile Rahmi. So it gives a big effect, in their lives.
Yeah.
Because Sile Rahmi is a thing that is incumbent in Islam.
It's very much.
Keeping ties with your aunts and immediate family members.
It is very important for us to be careful with how we behave with our children about others as well.
Yeah, in front of the children, there are certain behaviors that should not be taken for granted.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, thank you very much. So we're going to take a short break, and inshallah, after the break, we're going to continue this discussion.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back to your audience to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing.
Another mistake that a parent often makes is that she has or he has wrong expectations from the child. Maybe they expect too much from him, beyond his capacity, beyond his age limit. Some parents would like their children to behave totally like adults.
Yeah.
Especially when they take them out, they feel that the child should be pin drop silence.
Shouldn't dirty things.
Exactly. Especially if they are small. Mm. Or if they are a bit big and they say silly comments, the child says no. Don't say anything when you're outside.
The parents
again,
the child,
killing their self-esteem, as we talked about earlier. So they don't want them to run around, to play, to talk loudly, touch things around the house, and they don't understand, they fail to realize that all these activities are part of growing up.
Yeah.
To be a healthy adult, a child needs to have passed these various stages, each of which is a building block in his character.
Exactly.
You know, that determine the other characters. It's like a building block. If that is not formed properly, the later things don't come in properly. They don't fit in properly. So, in this regard, I would like to mention a hadith by Mufazzal, our sixth imam, describes the wisdom behind the childish behavior, which some adults dislike.
Mm.
It's very nice to reflect upon this hadiths of Mufazzal, because they are to deal with creation and why a child behaves childishly, for example.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the parents don't, they have so many expectations from the child. So this is why a child behaves childishly, the reason.
Wow.
That if a child had been born with mature intellect, he would have been astounded on opening his eyes and seeing such a varied assortment, a variety of assortment, different kinds of forms and distinctive images of unity and disunity. For a long time, he would not understand where he came from and where he arrived, and whether all that he was seeing was in a state of dream or wakefulness.
Oh.
If he had been born with mature intellect, this is still the hadith, he would have felt disgusted and degraded on feeling himself being carried about in the lap, fed with milk, and wrapped in, for example,
cloth.
Pampers, bandages. He would feel disgusted about it. He would say that, no, I wouldn't, because he would be able to rationalize,
He
would feel ashamed.
He'd feel shy.
But a child is a child, you see. They would not have been, if they had been born with mature intellect, that sweetness, nor that consideration for infants in the minds of adults which come from fondling the untutored child. The sweetness and the innocence wouldn't be there anymore. Their artlessness creates a particular attraction. As such, he is born into the world without an understanding for anything, quite unaware of the world and what lies therein. He views all these things with his undeveloped brain and inadequate understanding, and so does not feel perplexed.
Mm.
He doesn't feel, he's so, you know, like normal doing his activities, whilst the parents here feels that, you know, ashamed, feeling ashamed in front of others. She shouldn't. A parent should feel, in fact, take him to places where she knows she wouldn't be, you know, like told off.
Yeah.
Especially when a child has this habit of touching things. Choose your places where to go. Go with the, you know, in houses where parents have children.
Yeah.
Not in parents that they decorate their houses in such a way that you can't even, you know, touch one item.
Exactly.
Another phrase of the hadith says that his intellect and understanding develop by degrees, slowly from time to time, little by little. This introduces him gradually to the things around him, and then accustoms his brain accordingly to grow up and to accept everything around him.
It's like Allah has planned this all.
Yes, he's planned it.
Okay, thank you very much. We are just going to take a short break, and after the break, we're going to continue this discussion. Thank you. Stay tuned.
Ya Muqiyal Khairat, Ya Muqiyal Khairat.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "He who has a child must treat him in a childish manner."
Ya Muqiyal Khairat, Ya Muqiyal Khairat.
Okay, so you're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing. So, what are the other wrong expectations we have from kids?
Yes, there are many wrong expectations that sometimes we as adults have towards our kids, and that messes about everything. And, for example, the child lives in a world quite different from ours, and their perspective is different, you know, and it's very important for themselves also. So if you meddle with them, you know, their perspective, we may ruin things altogether. For example, if we don't allow a child to have a little of his own independence, to, you know, meddle with things that he's interested in, for example, if the consequences are not very destructive, I mean, we should give him the chance to investigate for himself, and, you know, his inquisitive nature, like, demands it, that he should experience and learn, right?
Yeah.
The children like learning through experience, and themselves too. So we should try to give them that much space, you know, so that they can experience and learn. But if you become so rigid and so, you know, disciplinary attitude, you know, then they wouldn't learn so fast, and they wouldn't even learn how to make their own decisions in future.
Very true.
Are the mistakes adults do by thinking that the children are so disciplined, whilst that is not the real thing wanted from the children.
I think they feel like this is in fact what's good, that, you know, trying to be disciplined and making sure our kids from a young age, if they learn to be like this, then, you know, when they grow up, they'll be perfect, you know?
Yeah, they don't know that this will actually do more harm than good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good to give some flexibility in their life.
Hmm.
A small thing shouldn't be treated like a major issue, you know?
Yeah.
So parents should be wise enough to think over this matter and not to, you know, make the children feel that they are so much in a, like a restricted.
Yeah, they should try and put themselves in their children's shoes.
Yeah, like sometimes, you know, it happens when you want to go out, for example, and you give this rigid behavior in the child's mind that you have to behave this way.
Yeah.
You don't have to move. You have to sit besides me, otherwise I'll pinch you from the back and things like that. It was practiced in our times way back, and parents who brought up the children in that era, till now, unfortunately, I hear parents saying that so-and-so children are so naughty. They can't sit in one place. They don't know children are...
Exactly.
They are supposed to move, investigate, be happy. And the sawab goes to the parent who feels that, no, let them be given space.
Yeah, I think the older times people, they feel like we're doing a mistake if we let our children, you know, have their own space. They feel like, no, then they're not going to be nurtured properly. They're not going to be disciplined.
Yeah.
Then you have to scold them sometimes. You have to be rigid with them. But because they don't know, you know, now that we've got more experience, we're learning more, we're understanding that this is, in fact, a necessity for a child, you know.
And they don't want to listen also. They want to just stick to their views, unfortunately.
Exactly.
But these are the wrong expectations to have from children. I mean, I feel that now that knowledge has progressed so much, books are so much, you know, like at our disposal, so such grandparents also should think about it and should read and should come with terms with the fact that these are wrong expectations to have from the child, that if you take the child out, he should be so, you know, well-mannered and things like that. And they translate well-mannered into sitting into one place and not, you know, asking questions or not talking a little loudly, for example.
Yeah.
We hush them off and...
And unfortunately, then, like, when there are those children who are disciplined and there are those who are naughty, they would turn to the discipline and say, look, these are so, you know, perfect. And what's wrong with you?
And then there's a gap always, you know, in those children.
Hmm.
They feel a bit complexed.
That they feel we're not good enough.
We are not good enough. Or, you know, it gives less self-esteem than the required, that Islam wants a lot of confidence, a lot of self-respect.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. Dear audience, thank you for joining us on the program. If you have any questions, comments or suggestions, please contact us at our email englishradio@irib.ir and visit us at our website farstoday.com. Inshallah, until the next program, fi amanillah and God bless you all.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.